looking at?
I don't know. I'm watching something very unsettling that I shouldn't be.
Your phone is so big, and I know that it's just the standard size, but to me, it looks humongous.
Yes. The bigger, the better, as I always say.
Size queen.
Please.
iPhone size queen.
We're absolutely not going down that road. Please.
Welcome back to another episode of Smell You Later, your favorite podcast about scents and smells.
We got a good new tagline.
We do.
Your favorite podcast about our ex-boyfriends and tax evasion. more likely.
Just an asterisk. The tagline is an asterisk.
Yeah, exactly.
That leads to nowhere.
The show is whatever you want it to be.
I think that. I have had a great week in the development of smells because I made yet another appointment with my ENT.
I'm going to pass out when you tell the story. Sibyl got shots in her nose.
I think they're called turbines.
Oh, God.
Which I was like,
isn't that part of a plane?
I know. I was like, isn't that part of the Titanic?
Oh.
The thing that sunk the Titanic? Anyway, yeah, I saw a different ENT and he was like, yeah, you look like you have allergies. And I'm like, you're telling me problems? I need solutions, sir. Yeah. I don't know what to do and I don't want to do surgery. And he was like, okay, well, the next thing we would do is just inject your nasal turbines with steroids. And I was like, that sounds incredibly scary. And I don't know why I do this with doctors, where I try to seem chill about things.
I've never tried to seem chill about anything, no. So I cannot relate to that.
I don't know why I feel the need to be like, I'm not a baby, I can do this. And he's like, even my most squeamish patients don't feel this because they numb you beforehand, so you don't feel it.
That's a needle too.
No, they just soak cotton balls and light a cane and they stick them up your nose.
I guess I'm not afraid of needles. I just don't especially love them.
Same. I don't love them. It's more the anticipation of the pain that gives me more anxiety than the actual, because it takes like 2 seconds,
right?
Literally. And then it's just like a really weird POV when there's a person putting a large needle up your nose. And I was like, this is how it happens. This is how I get a lobotomy.
Yeah, literally. Like, suck my brain out while you're up there, please. Had enough.
And then he was like, well, usually 50% of patients will feel significant effects like within the first week, but you're supposed to do 3 shots a week apart each. Because I was like, well, how long is this going to take? I need to smell today.
Yeah.
I need to be smelling today.
Well, what Sable's not telling you is she and I went to dinner that night with Brian from Hawthorne and Dana from Givaudan. And she was like, I want to taste this food.
Yeah, literally that. I was like, I need to make this appointment today to see if they can get me in because I need to taste that food.
I feel
food.
Like I'm going to dinner.
Yeah. Because I hadn't been able to properly smell or taste for like 2 weeks at that point. And I was like, okay, this is getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think I'm fully plateaued with Flonase. I've reached a level of tolerance where I don't think it's going to do anything for me anymore. So luckily,
unless they want to sponsor the show.
Yes, please sponsor us, Flonase.
Then we
makers of Flonase. That would actually make a lot of sense for them.
It would.
A smell podcast. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But yeah, that shot fucking horked. Like within an hour, I was like, the world is coming back. It's amazing.
Well, we're happy to have you back.
Yeah. And I'm like, everybody, don't take it for granted. Even the bad smells in the world at least tell you information about where you are and where maybe not to go.
Right.
I don't think people realize how much smell defines your presence until you don't have it.
Mm.
Because I feel like I was so checked out and just in my brain. And then now that I can completely experience my environment, I'm so much more present and engaged in what's happening.
Oh, cute.
So I'm like, whoa.
I love that.
Whoa. Yeah. Anyway, steroids.
Steroids.
This podcast sponsored by steroids.
I felt like you. Last night, I went to dinner, and for my appetizer, I had soup, and for my entree, I had soup, and it was like the biggest fucking bowl of soup I've ever had. I'm still thinking about it. It was good.
What type of restaurant?
It was Thai. Have you been to Sage?
Oh, yeah, for
please
sure.
Fucking slap.
You got soup before soup?
Yeah, girl. To be fair, I thought soup round one was going to be more of a curry situation, and it was just soup, which was also, I'm not complaining.
Yeah, that's so funny.
I just felt like a water balloon after. I was like, so this is how she lives.
Just bloated constantly of my own doing.
Full of soup and beer.
Every time I get ramen, it's so delicious. And I'm like, don't drink the broth. It's a trap. Don't drink the broth. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, it's fine. I'll just slurp the broth. And then it's done. And I'm like, well, gonna pay for this tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Dehydrated. My hands so swollen. I can't get my rings off.
It's worth it. It's worth it.
It is worth it.
I feel like we can't talk about anything we talked about with Hawthorne. Because I feel like so much of it was like secret.
Yeah, Hawthorne's got some really cool stuff coming up.
Yes.
That's all we can say.
That's
sorry.
All we're allowed to
I
say.
Feel like that we're in this like fucking standstill of shit we can't talk about.
I know. It's so annoying.
I don't know. Come September, it's going to be lit. I mean, it's already lit, girls, but it's going to be a fun fall for newness. We should do actually, I just had a great idea. We should do on an upcoming episode where we don't have a guest, we should do like a gauntlet of all the shit that's coming out, all the vanillas.
The market episode.
The market episode.
The market report.
Yes, we could.
We could do that. I had totally forgotten I had done this interview or contributed to a Harper's Bazaar story by Kristen Limoges. Mm. I hope I'm saying her name right. And she did a story for Harper's Bazaar about the fragrances that perfumers wish they had created.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which was like so interesting. And then I was so mad that I was like, why didn't we think about that as an episode idea?
Totally.
Because whenever we ask perfumers what they're wearing or what they smell like, they're like, I don't smell like anything because I can't wear perfume to work because I make perfume for work.
They're always just like, I smell like sweat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, yeah. Great. We're off to the races with this one.
Something I'm working on that I can't talk about because it's an NDA. And I'm like, great.
I have to tell you something. Please do not let me forget.
What? Just tell me now.
It's about work. Oh. My actual job.
Okay. Just tell me now because whatever I was going to say definitely wasn't as important.
We are in a meeting this week. And we're going to do, I think I can talk about, yeah, whatever. We're going to reshoot some of our spa assets. And we're just in this random meeting with my creative team. And we're looking for a model, but it's going to be a really low level shoot. Just meaning we're only going to use these assets on the app. And I think like in an email, it's not a big
thing. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we're just doing a refresher. And they were like, does anyone know someone that's like beautiful with perfect skin that we could do close-ups of? That's just, you know, whatever, gorgeous and perfect skin. Right, and right, I was like, right. Yeah, bitch, me. And my boss was like, okay, you really tiptoed around that one. But I was like, they all sort of looked at me and I was like, yes, everyone I know works in beauty.
Yeah.
It was just you, Sable. And they were like, can you send us a list of people? And I was like, yes. But so I sent them a list of 10 people.
Yeah.
You were at the top. But I did say like, use my best friend, Sable. And then, but I didn't want to push it because I was like, let me not be weird.
Yeah.
And then, so I sent off this list. And then a lot of times like things like that just like never get heard from again. Like yeah, the shoot yeah, itself. Yeah. And then they came back a day or two later and they're like, yeah, it's first stages, but we really like Sable. And they made a board for you, actually, that they,
what?
It's just like three of your selfies.
Your microphone just peaked.
Yeah, imagine my surprise when we're in this meeting and they pull up this screen of your face. So it's like, that's my girl. So
that's so funny.
You may be in an Equinox.
Oh my shirt. God, me repped by Equinox? They're like, we'll pay you in a gym membership, which honestly, I think I would take at this point.
I mean, there's a little check attached to it, but if you say like cut it in
half, I would negotiate with a membership because I really like listening to sciencey podcasts, but then they tell me information that I can't unknow. For instance, like I listened to a Science Versus episode about whether exercise really helps you lose weight. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, it actually doesn't. It's calorie deficit that helps you lose weight. But exercise helps your brain create new brain cells.
Mm.
So in the long term, what's the word? Like pushes back onset of dementia or Alzheimer's if you have a history of that in your genes. Mm. And it just helps people keep focus. Basically, it helps your brain.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, maybe that's why my brain feels so stupid is because I sit around like a fucking potato all day and I take a walk, maybe like within a 5-block radius.
To get a croissant.
At a flat incline. To okay. get a croissant.
Okay, well, I stay in the gym and yeah. I'm still an idiot. So what is the truth?
Well, I haven't tried that yet. So it's like the one thing that it's like, you haven't tried that. And I'm like, fine, I guess I should start to exercise. Ugh.
You do yoga on your floor.
I don't think that counts.
Oh.
I think you need to raise your heart rate.
Sure.
And also my doctor's been telling me that and I'm just like, no. Thank you, but no.
You can do whatever you want.
I know, but I don't think I really considered it until I had to do a really long-term project that required using my brain at its highest capacities. And I was like, wow.
Oh, your book?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, we are not prepared for this. This level of braining.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So I was like, maybe this would be helpful to exercise. So I thought about that. I was like, maybe I should.
So I thought about that.
I thought about exercising.
Well, they expressly told me not to tell you. So I'm glad I just told you on our podcast for thousands
That's
of people.
So funny. I don't take it personally if they're like, no, not her. Like, I don't care. That's really funny. But I thought you were going to say that Equinox is launching a body line or even a fragrance. Which
I fucking should.
Yeah. I was like, that actually seems like the natural progression.
Soho House has their own, exactly. I mean, like white label ass line, but
I don't really see it making sense for Soho House because they're like a club, whereas Equinox has an application for the products. Mm-hmm. Like you put the body products in the showers, yeah. in the bathrooms.
I know.
That would make sense.
Well, and we have Kiehl's in yeah. our locker rooms and people are obsessed with it. And I'm like, girl, it's Kiehl's. Yeah. Move on.
Yeah, but I feel like it has the luxury brand recognition.
Totally. But like it should be our own shit.
Yeah, like having your own shit, especially like for a corporation of that evil size. Like
exactly. Yeah, it's like
like when you're that big as to be like known as baseline evil, like you can afford to make your own.
No, exactly. exactly. Like, our buildings are built with bricks of dollars. Yeah. Like,
I was like, guys, why don't you just launch your... Okay.
Let's call that all alleged in case I said something I shouldn't have.
Yeah. I mean, it is alleged.
Yeah.
Anytime I've done any branded work, they always send you a deck of the scope of the work.
Sure.
They will have mined selfies from my Instagram. And it's like so funny to think about some creative director or someone just like looking through an Instagram being like...
Isn't that humiliating? Oh,
it's
my God.
It's so humiliating.
Anytime I even show up to a press event or whatever where there's like a face sheet and I see the photo that they use, I'm like, God damn it. Like, did you have to use...
I know. Which is also funny that you were like, find someone with perfect skin. And I had, for the first time and last time in my life
what
that I can think of.
Done?
Yeah. So I went to, I guess, my dermatologist, because I don't have any of the dermatologists at Idris Dermatology. And he recommended Althera.
What does that mean?
So it's like a non-surgical way to tighten your skin using ultrasound. So it penetrates deep under the dermis to train your skin to produce more collagen and tighten, blah, blah, blah. Again, all of these treatments, which I think baseline, at least New York City prices, depending on where you want to get it done, it's like $3,000 to $5,000. And I would not do this if it wasn't free as part of my job.
Oh,
sure.
They gave it to you for free?
Yes. Oh, God, no, I would not pay for that.
It looked painful.
It was painful.
It looked like you got scratched a bunch.
I still have marks.
Like, Jesus Christ.
I got it. What is it? I got it on Tuesday. Today's Saturday. It's like 5 days ago.
Was it like spot? Like, did they do spot treatment or?
Yeah. Okay. It was just like pretty much just like my jaw. And my chin and my cheeks, which also, again, is like having another person just be like, we got to tighten your face. And I'm like, does it need to? Do we really?
Yeah.
Like, is it that bad?
Are you writing about it?
I might. Okay. I might.
They just gave it to you because they know that's what you do.
Yeah. Oh. I think that's the thing, too. I feel like there's such a different way that like beauty practitioners speak about this sort of stuff, because if any other person had been like, it looks like you're having the beginnings of jowling, I would have been like, shut your face. Like, but when it's a clinician, you're just like, oh, your eyes are targeted to see minute little things like this.
Yeah, well, like, stop looking then.
Which also that I'm just like, no one would see this but you.
Yeah.
Because it's your job to target aesthetic things like this.
Right.
And again, I'm like, if it wasn't free and if it's a certain level of non-invasiveness, like, I'm game. Game to try a lot of stuff. But I did not know how much it would hurt.
Oh.
Because it just feels like, if you think of like a static shock, it's like a bunch of those in succession in a targeted area,
like,
which at first actually isn't bad. Certain areas are like a little bit more spicy than others. The whole thing lasted like maybe like an hour.
It's like a tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I thought. I was like, I feel like this is probably what getting a tattoo feels like.
Sure. It's probably more painful, honestly.
Yeah. At the practice, it's kind of a bougie practice. Yeah. So the bedside manner is impeccable.
Mm.
And then they kept being like, are you sure you don't want a painkiller? And I was like, after a while, I was like, okay, why do y'all keep suggesting that? I'm like, how bad really is it? And they're like, well, it depends on your pain tolerance. But just because it lasts for an hour, it does build up.
Yeah. Well, you sort of get worn out too. You know, your body's like, all right, enough.
Yes. Yeah. Towards the end, I was like, okay, how much longer? I might have to tap out.
Yeah.
But at first I was like, oh, this isn't that bad. Like, it's fine. But I think they're like, yeah, sometimes we do laughing gas or Valium. And I was like, dude, I'm not trying to take laughing gas in the middle of my day.
I am.
I have shit to do after this.
Right. Like,
so like, I was like, not like getting your molars taken out.
Oh God, please.
Just imagine tottering around Midtown just after this.
Oh my God, laughing gas in Midtown.
Yeah,
please.
But yeah, for like the rest of the day, there was just like a little bit of swelling and like kind of like bumpy bits, and I was like, is this normal?
Yeah,
what have I done?
Yeah.
I did not think this through.
Right.
I just accepted a free treatment because it was free from like a trusted professional. And then yeah,
I would do the same,
wouldn't we all? Anyway, Tynan, what are you smelling today?
I am wearing, it's not out yet, but it comes out the day that this episode drops. I'm wearing the new DS and Durga Studio Juice called Crush Balls. That is the name. It is a tennis
crush.
Crush.
Okay.
Crush Balls.
Got it. Wow, the visuals on that.
It's a tennis inspired fragrance. It's coming out in tandem with the US Open starting.
Oh.
Cute. Yada yada.
Yeah.
So this is not something that I would have tracked down myself to wear.
Okay.
But my editor reached out to me and asked me if I would cover it. And I was like, sure. So, you know, I thought it'd be fun, whatever. And I actually really love it. And I've been wearing it since I got it.
It smells like tennis balls, right?
No. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what you're supposed to think.
Yeah.
And maybe when you spray it on, the first couple seconds, you get a little bit of the, you know, chartreuse, fuzzy tennis ball vibes. Mm-hmm. But I think that's also in part just the fragrance having just been atomized and you're smelling the alcohol as well as the fragrance. So to me, it smells like, not that I would fucking know, but like playing tennis, like speed and adrenaline and competition and things like that on a, you know, but I'm going to read the notes only because it's kind of an LOL in the very Diaz and Durga way. So the top notes are green grass, rosemary, and yellow fuzz. The heart is hedge flowers and white cotton. And the base is a sporty accord and a hard court, like a hard tennis court. So that doesn't tell you anything. They're all storytelling notes. So what this smells like, we'll never know. But on me, it starts off being extremely tart to the point of almost bitter, very neroli, very citrus oil, orange rind, grapefruit. And then it slowly but surely warms up to be as bright as a solar flare, and then gets to be like a honeyed citrus almost. It's really, sorry, I just wrote about it, so it's like top of mind. Forgive me, this sounds scripted, but it's just, I mean, I really enjoy it. It's not something that I might go back to all the time, but I also sort of might. It's part of me, part of it to me is like almost a caricature of a traditional men's cologne in that it's so bright and so bitter, but it does get sort of really sweet in a citrusy, fruity sweetness way. I don't know. I was going to write about it because I was asked to, and it's like a fun seasonal, whatever, limited launch. And then I just ended up really loving it. So I've been wearing it since I got it. And yeah, Crush Balls is great. I mean, we always sort of most of the time get excited about the Diaz and Durga studio juices because you never really know what they have in store.
Yeah.
But this one is super fun and it's probably going to sell out as soon as it drops. You know, of everything like around it.
There's so many tennis freaks out there.
I know.
People love tennis.
This is not the first tennis scent that we've seen. We have The Soft Lawn by Imaginary Authors, and then Match Point by Otherland.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I mean, I think there's just, yes, obviously tennis balls have a smell, but this is very much, I think, the interpretation of the attitude and excitement of the sport. To me, because I wouldn't really want to smell like rubber balls all day, but I do want to smell like this all day, so it's great.
I just don't do sports that involve chasing balls.
You can say that again, sister.
Because I'm really bad at them, so I do more chasing than actually hitting a ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Sable, what do you smell like today?
Okay, I smell like a new Wilhelm Parfumery scent called Faces of Francis. Francis, the Francis in question is Francis Bacon.
Okay.
It's inspired by, freely inspired by the mysterious triptychs of Francis Bacon. So it's meant to be like a surrealist, artistic surrealist scent, which is interesting. It's always interesting to me when someone makes a scent based on a piece of visual art.
Who the fuck is Francis Bacon?
I don't know. And in my brain, for some reason, my brain connected it to Kevin Bacon. And then it was like, no, wrong Bacon.
Okay.
And I remember thinking that too when we had Wilhelm Parfumery on the podcast last year, and he had also mentioned Francis Bacon, and I was like, huh?
Oh, these are super surrealist.
Jesus yeah, they're Christ. Very surrealist. Okay.
Oh, I get it. A lot of faces.
It's a lot of faces. But what's interesting is that the scent itself, it grabbed me because it called out saffron and pistachio. So obviously I'm like, two of the things I love.
Yeah.
And then when I got it and I sprayed it on, my first thought was, oh my God, this smells so much like universal flowering saffron flower. And it does. They're different. They're very different. Like I did like a wrist to wrist comparison, and saffron flower is a lot powdery and softer and like more like cushy. And Faces of Francis is the same pistachio saffron plushness, but then it has all these other kind of like crispy, like crisper underlying notes in it. So I'm like, oh, it's the boy version of saffron flower.
Yeah. But
there's something, I think what I realized, like what I'm also drawn to with saffron forward scents, there's like something about them that kind of reminds me of the smell of crayons. So there's this strange nostalgic pull for me. And this one actually, it smells a little bit like paint in a good way. Not like house paint, but it smells like this craft paint that I remember as a kid, where it's almost like Play-Doh-y.
This is so funny because like you and I smell this fragrance so differently.
Yeah.
So differently.
There's something Play-Doh-y about it, or like clay-like.
I completely disagree, but go off.
Well, you also only had grandma made natural Play-Doh, where I had the Play-Doh TM.
That's true. That's true. I always fucking forget that. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They sent me an itty bitty comp file of this like months back. And I really like it, but I like it even more now. And they were, like everyone else says, really talking up the pistachio in it. And
I don't think it stands out that much.
I don't either. Yeah. I think it's more like the part of the bigger story. Yeah. It's you can't smell it in isolation. But yeah, pistachio saffron, to me, it's just so softly warm and sweet and different.
Yeah. It's very sweet and bouncy and like almost balloon-like to me.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, like there's something that's very light and floaty, but also bouncy. Like that's like the best term I can think about it. Yeah,
I like your balloon.
Yeah.
It smells like, I don't know, Chicago in the summer or something. Like
it smells like a really expensive bouncy castle.
Sure, sure. I think you get more rubber than I do. Yeah. To me, it's almost buttery and a little bit cinnamony and... Mm. It's really hard to describe, but it's really fucking good, as most things from Vilhelm are. I liked it a few months ago, and I'm really happy it's out. I like it more and more. I think if I was to smell this on someone, I'd be like, hold on, what are you
wearing? Now that it's dried down a little bit, I'm definitely getting more of the woody...
Can I smell it?
Yeah, suede-ness and stuff.
God, that is so pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, once it dries down, then you get a little bit more of the woodiness, the spicy warmth, but it's still a dry warmth. It's not like...
It's like an airy warmth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not a heavy warmth. It's right in the middle.
Yes.
You know, I wouldn't call it fresh. I wouldn't call it bright, but I wouldn't call it warm and spicy either.
Fair.
It's just, bouncy, I guess, is what I keep getting to.
Room temperature. Room temperature.
Tepid. Tepid.
Not tepid. But it's like, it's such a unique scent. I don't think there are a lot of scents out there like this at all.
No, it reminds me of something, but I don't know what. And I think that something is not a fragrance.
I think you're right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Fucking me with that. But no, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Just based on the notes list alone, I'm like, this feels misleading. But
what are the, can I see that?
Okay. So it says top notes are aldehydes and saffron, heart notes, grilled pistachio, juniper wood, and driftwood. Base notes, oud, ambergris, cypriol, vetiver, and fumed styrax.
I do not get any aldehydes from this.
Like, I don't get vetiver. I don't get styrax.
Oh, it's so pretty.
I don't even get oud. But even then, it's like, again, like you can never tell from an ingredients list because like you don't know the percentages and the composition. Yeah. So, but it's so pretty.
I think it might be
my favorite Vilhelm perfumery. Really? I think Moon Carnival was my previous favorite. And I think this tops Moon Carnival.
I think Morning Chest, I think, will always be my favorite Vilhelm. I'm just so attached to it. But this is, I mean, you might be right. This is really up there for me for sure.
Yeah. I haven't smelled anything like this out there.
Yeah. God, the bottle's so pretty too. Just like how fast.
I know. I love these like flatter, wider than they are tall perfume bottles.
Yeah, really pretty.
I think it just makes the liquid look interesting because it's like almost like a decanter.
Right. No, I was going to say the exact same thing, like a tumbler.
A big old bubble. Yeah. Anyway, we have a fragrance brand on today that I was aware of in the back of my mind for the past few years. I think my introduction to them was when I was at Allure, and their PR firm at the time had just like sent over whatever their new launches were. And they were these really beautiful, opulent, luxurious looking bottles and packages. Mm-hmm. And then the scent itself, it was something with a tiger on the bottle. I forget the name, but it was a super opulent, spicy, warm, spicy scent that I was like, okay, whoa, this is like that sector of luxury perfume that's like really focused on oud and spices and heady stuff. So I think at that time I had kind of been like, ah, I don't think this is for me. And then recently I went to a breakfast event with them a couple weeks ago and then smelled a lot more of their collection, including their newest launch, Inverness. And I was like, wait, this is incredible. All of these scents are so exquisite and the bottles are so well designed. And then John, the co-founder, was such a great chat. So I was like, we should get them on the podcast.
Fuck yeah.
And luckily he took time out of his vacation to talk to us.
Well, and the cool thing is, and what I didn't know is that John and his partner also have two other brands, Hermetica and podcast favorite, Floraiku.
Yes.
And I wanted Floraiku for its own episode.
Same.
But then when I heard that we're the same person, I was like, okay, I guess we're killing three birds with one stone.
Yeah.
We've talked about Floraiku quite a bit on the show.
Yeah.
So it's cool that we get to rope in sort of everyone, get to learn about Memo, I'm really interested in learning more about Floraiku and their just the inspiration for the brand, everything behind it, all of it.
For sure.
Yeah.
And now we will.
Let's do it.
Ha ha.
Well, thank you very, very much for asking me to join you on your podcast. I'm delighted and I feel very privileged. My name is John Malloy and I am one of the co-founders of Memo Paris. And my wife is the second co-founder. We've been working together for over nearly 20 years now. And I will try to answer questions on behalf of both of us. I'll do my best. And there may be room for correction or improvement later on.
That's okay. And John, we always like to kick it off by asking, what do you smell like today?
What I smell like today, actually, I've been wearing today a perfume called Iberian Leather. I don't know why, but recently I've been wearing it a lot. It's got a lovely line on the bottle. And maybe it's on holidays, feeling that I can run out in the mountains and roar if I want to, or jump up and down. And the freedom of feeling like I'm unleashed, because I'm actually on holidays at the moment. And so it's kind of quite fun. So I've been sporting or wearing Iberian Leather for the last few days. And it's nice. A fragrance that came out about a year ago from Memo Paris. And it's probably we call it the king of all the leathers, really. It's just a perfume that evokes so much. And it tries to capture the whole Iberian Peninsula, Spain, Portugal, that tradition of leather, the craftsmanship, and it gives a lot of strength, and it's very long lasting, and it's got a lot of character. So kind of, it makes me smile, especially when I'm a novelist.
I really like that one because it makes me feel really tough. There's like a brashness to it, but it's also really smooth, which I like. I don't know.
I love that.
I feel really chic and tough when I wear it.
Thank you very much. Well, I like it as well because the lion as well. My mum's from, was born right in Kenya. So the lion often makes me think of her antidotes, being a child, being out in Africa, and her enjoyment, her love of her childhood. It was amazing. And so it's always kind of rings a few bells for me. And I always feel it evokes a lot of strong memories. It's got this wonderful cedar wood, which gives us this invigorating thing. And it's got coriander essence. Mm-hmm. And that with the leather at core we built has been as kind of really kind of, I think it's kind of made a signature, which is kind of fun. It's very colorful, actually.
It is. Yeah, it's very complex.
We are very excited to have you on the show today because we have both been fans of Memo Paris for a long time, as well as the two other brands that you have created. But I guess we just wanted to start from the beginning. We'd love to know, as much as you want to divulge, like how you started this brand with you and your wife. Like, how did you meet? How did you discover that you shared a love of fragrance? And then how did Memo Paris come to be?
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, at the very beginning it started, we met, and I think when you're crazily in love, when you first meet, you do crazy things. It's probably the initial answer. And to give you a slightly more serious answer, I'd always worked with brands. I was meant to be a banker. I should have gone out and made lots of money and been, you know, been driving around lots of sports cars. And I started in fashion, because I was putting myself through university in Dublin, and I worked in a wonderful department store called Brown Thomas, and I was working with great brands, and I developed a love for brands and things that were made, handmade, and things that were craftsmanship, and where I could see the human touch. And I think it was my first inkling that I liked being with creative people. And I think when I met my wife, Clara, I think that was the first, you could say one of the first things that really brought us together was our, both of us had this love for creation and creative people. And Clara had come very much from an art point of view, and she had her own business working with magazines. She used to create magazines for companies and give sort of a editorial touch for what magazine companies wanted to bring out, a new magazine. She would kind of think of the concept and develop that. So she had a creative background from art. She had an art magazine first when she left university. And I'd worked in fashion for 10 years. And then we met and we thought that, wow, well, we both loved this common denominator between us was creation and art and working with creative people. We said, why don't we put it together? Thinking that when you have your own business, you've got all the freedom in the world. We thought that'd be great.
Right.
You know, let's make a business together and have ultimate freedom. You know, that's how naive we were at the time.
Sure.
We must have been around 30 or so. And we're both in Paris, living in Paris. I was working in fashion and she was working with her magazines. Mm-hmm. And the idea came around, you know, where are we going to do a fashion brand, a leather goods brand? And then perfume sort of jumped out, and neither of us had pure perfume background. We both love fragrances, and I thought it was something we could do together. So Clara, at that stage as well, she was in the middle of writing a book about the noses or the perfumers, and she brought out at the same time, you could say, the first Bible in our industry of niche perfume, which is called 22 Perfumers in Creation. Mm-hmm. And that was when she interviewed all of the, or 22 at the time, of the world's best noses, asking them how they created and taking them as a creative population and treating them on the same lines as any creative fashion creator or jewelry creator were treated. Because before then, noses were not treated at the same way or in the same media scope as other designers or creators. So I think this is one of the breakthroughs in our industry, was putting out the notes, say, look, these creative people, and it wasn't a book about their CV or what perfume they'd made. It was, how do you create? What is the creative process of making a fragrance? And she had deep down personal interviews with 22 of these perfumers and went all around the world to bring out this book, which became sort of like really something critical, the beginning of the niche wave, you could say, back then in 2005, 2006, 2007, when the whole niche wave of brands developed. And that was something very key, because it was her way, really, you could say, of having a wonderful opportunity and chance to meeting these people and to deep diving into their process, how they work and how they think. And that's how she met Alinor Masney, who became Arnaud's. And that was kind of, you know, the icing on the cake, was meeting different people, wonderful people, and then meeting a nose where there was a real fit, alignment of stars. And then sort of, I think the creative process started from there.
Wow. What a great interview process to finding, like finding a perfumer that you'd like to work with. That's right. Amazing.
Isn't it funny though? You sort of mentioned you were young and naive when you started. You just thought, oh, let's start a perfume brand, not really knowing how complicated it was going to be. I feel like sometimes when you go into a new creative project or process, sort of like the less you know, the better. Mm-hmm. In some ways, because if any of us knew how hard all this shit was going to be, no one would do anything new. You know what I mean? So it's like sometimes that little bit of being that naive is good, because you just sort of are forced to learn as you go.
Yeah, I think so. But I think at that stage of my life, I had an international background in fashion, and I traveled nearly many countries in the world, and I knew the distribution. And I love stores, department stores. So I think having started at 18, I had 12, maybe 15 years of time we started the brand of really traveling the world and knowing the stores. And I think that was one thing that I knew from the commercial side, from the side of branding, from where we could go, how we could start. And I had that understanding of working with partners, having set up my own fashion brand when I was 21, and going out there and launching a brand. All of that, I felt I could do it. And I wasn't afraid of that. So I think the what was new to us was actually the whole, you could say, working with the noses, working with the whole production cycle of fragrances. But the dream from the brand storytelling, how to build the brand slowly and do what you love doing and try and find your voice, and an understanding that a brand is a vision of the world. And that's where the name Memo came about as well, from Memo Your Memory, your olfactive memory. So I think all of that we felt very sure of. What we didn't, what we weren't sure of, was were there people out there that were going to like it? Because obviously we weren't coming from a pure marketing point of view, but we really believed in what we had, and we really believed in what we'd done at the time. And I think that sort of belief and that sort of energy that we had to go out and show the world, I think helped us a lot, because it was quite contagious and people wanted to be part of it. And it helped us to open doors in some of the best department stores in the world, where people really followed us and said, look, guys, this seems great. We're going to give you a chance. And they did. And I think those people are always great as well, because otherwise you couldn't start without the sort of open-minded stores around the world, like Harvey Nichols in London, Le Bon Marché in Paris at the time, Bergdorf Goodman's in New York. All of them came open-handed saying, look, we really want to take this on. We love it. And that was great.
Yeah, that's so funny. For some reason, I had assumed that the name Memo had to do with the themes of traveling and journeying, because the fragrances come with these really beautiful packages that look like a worldly map with a postcard.
The memo came from really from your memory, because out of all of our memories or our senses, our actual memory of smell is our strongest memory.
Right, right.
And we wanted to start with a platform of something to have another strength. So Memo, your olfactive memory. And then there's also an expression in France, the Madeleine of Proust, which means whenever Proust smelt this Madeleine, he thought of his grandmother, and it became sort of a saying. And we all have our memos in a way. So you'll have memos of your childhood. And a memo is, for us, is something where you can close your eyes and you can paint a very vivid picture. You can hear the voices, you can see and smell, and the whole memory comes back to you. And that's why the name was a short name. It just sounded wonderful to us. And then we just jumped on it. And actually, it was a friend of ours, when we were talking about it, actually suggested the word Memo to us. It wasn't even us who came up with the name Memo at the beginning. We were talking about it, we're thinking about memory, and said, no, just call it Memo. And that's
great.
That's how it started.
Love that. You mentioned a sable before this episode, something about skin memory of fragrance. Does that sort of go along with the memory concept of memo? Can you talk a little bit about skin memory? I've never heard of that. I'm super interested.
Yeah. When we were chatting at the One Hotel at the Inverness event. Yeah. I just remember that you had mentioned this term skin memory and it piqued my interest.
Well, I think that there's two parts. If I remember rightly, there's your memory of your skin memory, something I don't know how. Maybe I'm mixing up two different things, but our memory of smell is something that starts off when you're born. You can only remember or recognize one smell, the smell usually of your mother. Mm-hmm. So that smell is comforting and as you're born as a child. And so your memory is like a piece of paper. And when it's like sticking a pen and making the first holes, the smell of your mother, and you write mother beside it. And then afterwards, if it's the father, it's the second person that huddles and is kind and looks after the child. Then the second, so maybe the father, and then maybe other members of the family or friends, whoever. And your whole olfactory memory starts at the very beginning and develops around whatever you feel is safe, nice, something you can eat that you feel good about. And all of these start to create your first olfactory memories. And as you grow older in life, you can realize that all of these, they get larger and larger the more you smell. And if you put names to them, you can memorize them easily. And this is very different to us as human beings with our olfactory memory, because we can really, you know, smell something, knowing that we could pick up something, smell something like car gas or whatever. We're not going to drink it. It'd mm-hmm. be very poisonous for us to do that, but we can smell it and we can appreciate it. Mm-hmm. As for animals, when you look at the size, they have a lot stronger, a lot longer nose. They can smell from more distance, but their brain is a lot smaller. So their olfactive thinking is based on primary needs, reproduction, safety, fear, food. As for we have, as human beings, we've got a huge brain, but we've got a very small, relatively small nose. So therefore, we can smell something, but we can compartmentalize lots of different things without having the same impulses or basic impulses when we smell something. That's how we can develop over time. And I think when you talk to someone in the industry, we talk about rose, they'll say, well, you know, there's maybe 1,000 different rose smells. When you talk to someone who's in fashion, you talk about black, they can see 50 different blacks maybe. But anyone outside of the industry can see black is black or rose is rose. So I think this is sort of, I don't know if I'm answering the question in the right way, but it sounds quite long-winded even to myself.
No, it's fascinating.
Keep going.
I'm sorry about that. It's fascinating. I mean,
I've never thought of it that way.
No, and like we hear so much about fragrance and memory and how closely they are intertwined, of course, but it's interesting to have a little bit more of an understanding that it really all starts at birth and with your mom, and that sort of shapes the way that you know, your sense of smell and how you like to smell what you like. So that's really fascinating.
And if you try, if you actually test someone, you ask someone, they smell something, and they go, oh, I remember the first time I smelled that. They will really give you a vivid picture of that. And you can try it also with someone who unfortunately maybe is losing some of their faculties. Let's say they can't see as well or they can't hear as well. Usually when they can smell something, it will bring back very, very strong memories. And that's worked a lot. And even now they're working with people who've got memory loss or people who've had accidents. They're working a lot on the olfactive memory of how to bring back a memory through the olfactive method. So there's a lot we still don't know. And I think it was amazing during the whole COVID period, how perfumes, fragrances, home fragrance took another major important role for people who wanted to express certain emotions, but obviously being confined couldn't. Yet they found a vector through fragrances, through home fragrances, to expand certain emotions, to feel really happy, to feel really different, to keep changing. I think I've had a lot of people I've spoken to since then. I said, you know, I used to have sort of maybe two or three fragrances. Now I've got 8. Yeah. You know, now I've got 10. I'm really using fragrances to make me feel lots of different ways. And I think that's great because for me, fragrances is a joy. It's a joy of beauty. It's a joy of smiling. And it just should make you feel happy. And there should be no rules. It should be simple pleasure.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, I love that.
I noticed that so many of Memo's fragrances have to do with a place and journeying and like a place. And I love the leather collections and how it's a different interpretation of leather based on an imaginative narrative of a place. How do you know which places in your memories are worthy enough to become a Memo fragrance?
Well, now I'm probably touching on Clara's territory, so I have to kind of measure my words. Really, I think if you take a step back and we have a look at it, places are magnetic. And you can go to lots of depths about that, of people looking before they build a house and see if there's any magnetic fields. But places have a huge amount of magnetism and they pull us towards them. And it's like beauty. So people, before there were religions, people worshipped places. They worshipped a beautiful mountain, a beautiful sea view, a beautiful sunset, whatever it was. People really worshipped a lot of places because they felt something in return, and that sort of beauty. Mm-hmm. And so when we're choosing a place, we often ask ourselves, do we choose the place or does the place choose us? Even the other day, Clara was talking about a perfume that came out called Sherwood. And Sherwood, the name, Clara says the name also, when she was reading it from her childhood, she always loved the name because maybe being French, Sherwood means like expensive wood and the whole thing of the place of being in Nottingham, Robin Hood. So you've got a number of different things pulling you towards a forest which was romantic, a forest which brought safety, a forest which was a feel-good fairy tale. So a lot of things can pull you towards a place, and a place in Sherwood where you have these wonderful oak forests where these trees are still, over 1,000 years are there. I think it's a two-way process. And I think that's after looking back and trying to analyze why we have certain places and why we don't have other places, I would say it's down to that sort of meeting between the name, the place, the emotions it evokes, and its sort of its draw. And I think that's what Clara feels with it. There's something is with the name, something with the place itself, mm-hmm. and then the beauty that place gives. And what we do, the place is the hero. You know, none of our brands mm-hmm. are called after us. Paris is it's the memo of a place. And the place is the hero. And we as brand owners or as brand builders, we feel that it's our job to bring together a really creative team of writers, illustrators, noses, and our job's like a guardian to make sure that all of these people bring together and try to tell the world about the beauty of that place. Because when you see and feel beauty, you feel better. And beauty's always made us feel good.
Right.
Yeah. I'm also interested in your choice to bring each location to life through leather. There are a lot of brands that just do scents based on location or things like that. But the leather aspect, like Italian leather, Sicilian leather, et cetera, et cetera. Why was leather the lens that you chose to see all of these places through?
Well, we first started our first collection. We first brought out, there was 4 fragrances. We didn't start with any leathers. Mm. And I think the leather, actually at the very beginning, Clara hated leather fragrances. She hated them, detested them because they were like represent men-only clubs, Chesterfield chairs, inside of old cars, old secondhand cigar smoke, everything. And so it was really a dusty category, and it had been overlooked for years. And because I'm Irish and Clara came to Ireland, she was also trying to wonder what people loved about Ireland and how they, why there was such a sort of a love for the country that rains a lot. And then my brother was working, he's a racehorse trainer and racehorse breeder. He was working the horses at the gallops in the morning, and Clara got up very early and she went out in the mist and saw the horses working and the smell of the fresh cut green grass, the warmth of the leather on the saddles and the tack room, everything coming back in. And she suddenly got this wind, this feeling, yes, I understand what's about Ireland's about. I understand what this love and this youthfulness of this country has. And it's expressed to something like leather. And then it kind of fell together when she was trying to make this perfume, trying to work with Alinor to work on a leather base, because leather travels and it was always used to travel. Oh. And leather and perfume had been intrinsically linked from the very beginning, because you might know that all leather that we wear today, no matter what it is, has always been perfumed. And that perfumers used to always work with leather tanneries. And there's age-old types of leather. People talk about the smell of the leather that was produced that came from Russia 100 years ago, because in those countries, they used the birch tree. They used to roll the leather during the tanning process in the sap of the birch tree, in the bark of the birch tree, and the sap would go in, the sap would treat the leather. And that gave it a certain fragrance. And then as the French and the Italians treated leather differently, and that gave their leather fragrance. And you go to other countries, treat their leather in different ways. But if you think of it, before the advent of the motor car, people used to ride horses that wear a pair of leather gloves. Mm-hmm. And if you go back, this is way before COVID, you'd buy a pair of, a gentleman or a gentle lady would buy a pair of leather gloves, and they'd also buy a bottle of perfume at the same time. And when they took their hands out of the gloves after riding 20 miles to come in to see a friend, they would spray their hands with the fragrance, because the fragrance worked as a disinfectant and also perfumed the hands as well. So you can see there's been a lot of, over the years, there's a lot of intermingling between leather and fragrances. And we just love leather because leather ages well. leather tells a story. And also, when you're making a perfume, it's got this added difficulty or challenge, we would call it, that, you know, is when you're making a leather fragrance, is making two fragrances in one. First, you've got to make the leather accord, which is like a music accord. You've got to make this leather accord that you really like. And then you've got to build in your fragrance. And we've made over 500 different leather accords over the last nearly 20 years, and we've only used a few of those. And so it's kind of like a wonderful thing for us. We love playing with leather, and we think that leather can be made in lots of different ways. And that's why Irish leather became famous around the world, being the first fresh, green, youthful, exciting, energetic leather. And from there, we're able to stem from there and move forward.
That's really fascinating. I had no idea about any of that. Thank you for telling us all that.
Yeah, it's like one of those things that like you're cognizantly like aware of it, but you don't think about it because, of course, leather is a processed good.
Yeah.
And by and large, you can recognize the smell of a leather jacket or, you know, a leather handbag. But when you think about the provenance of where that's from, you're smelling the entire process as well.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And just for some listeners out there, because people, I know this might sound quite basic, and I know you've got a lot of perfume aficionados and experts listening. But if anyone is listening to the podcast, there's actually no leather in a leather fragrance. You know, it's just trying to capture what leather smells like. So often people ask me, say, look, John, I'm a vegan. Can I wear leather fragrances? I really take these questions very seriously because when you're not in the industry and you don't know, some people have ideas and they imagine where the fragrances are coming from. So I think it's very important sometimes to tell people because there are certain, or there were certain fragrances in the past that did come to from animal products or whatever it was. But now all those except for musk that you can find, or all musks now are all artificially made, and you don't have any musks that are taken from animals or anything like that. Just help people understand that there's no leather in a leather fragrance. That's very important, I think.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah.
Good call out.
I think people who are into fragrance understand that, but the typical consumer, when they see the word leather in a name, they might assume it's inside the fragrance.
Right. So as we said, we're huge fans of Memo, but also in the past, I don't know, year, 2 years, we've become really big fans of both Floraiku and Hermetica, but we've talked a lot about Floraiku on the show.
Yeah.
We both are obsessed with that entire collection, both the fragrances themselves, the names, the story and idea behind it. Do you want to talk just a little bit about the idea behind Floraiku, how it's different from Memo, and what brought you to start another brand?
You know, I'd like to say we have a strategy book and we wrote it down and we had a plan or a business plan, but to go, again, I think it's worth being honest. We were going to bring out a collection, a small collection within Memo, all about our travels in Asia. And especially Japan, which I'd worked for a Japanese fashion company for over 5 years. And I developed a huge love for all things from Japan, for the culture, and a huge respect. And I learned so much from the people, the country. And Clara, my wife, as I don't know if I said it wrong, she's also a French poet. And she's published a merited poet. And she had been working personally on haikus. And one day we were, you know, we were working this collection we want to bring out within Memo. And she said, John, do you know there's a huge similarity between how you write a haiku and how you make a perfume? And I said, go on, tell me. And she said, well, you know, you can spend a year writing 3 lines of a haiku, and it's much the same timing that it takes to bring out a perfume, to get it right, to make sure you really want to bring it out and that you can sign it off. And that, you know, there's like the 3 main parts of a fragrance with the head note, the body note, and the bass notes as well. Mm-hmm. And all the sort of similarities came out together. And we thought about this mini collection we were going to have. And suddenly we started with 3 perfumes and then it went to 9 perfumes. And we said, we can't bring out 9 perfumes. And then we said, well, why don't bring out a new brand around this and work on this? And it just happened like that. And that's how it came about. And basically flora being flowers and haiku being poetry. And it's, you know, it's perfume as a poem. And as you said earlier on, each of the names is one of the lines from the haiku poem that Clara has written. And we wanted to build the perfume with an architecture like a haiku. The symbol of a haiku is actually a bolt of lightning, because a haiku should touch you. You know, if you're walking around, you're reading a book of haikus, you just need one to touch you, stop you in your tracks and make you think. And that's a success of one haiku. Like going into an art exhibition, you're going to see one painting. You don't like everything, but if one painting stops and touches your mind and soul, that's been a great exhibition. And I think that's what I take of this. And that's what we felt, that if we could touch someone through a fragrance by having short formulas, a lot of natural ingredients. And that's what we built into the 3 collections of the flower collection, the tea collection, and the incense collection. And then we developed apart what we've been doing for a long time in the industry, but we'd never actually shown it or proposed it to our customers, was shadowing, whereby you could take your fragrance and through using another fragrance with it, not mixing it, not matching it, but having it one side of your body, one the other side, of it, just shadowing your perfume. And so this term we developed so that only people who are actually within your intimate zone can smell you have two perfumes on when you're wearing them. But anyone outside the intimate zone, what is your intimate zone? Roughly, it's the length of your arms. You hold your arms straight out, perpendicular, straight in front of you. That zone is your intimate zone. Within that, towards your end of your fingers and your body, your intimate zone. Outside of that, people can't smell two perfumes. They can only smell one. So we developed what's called shadowing. And your light shadow brings out the light side of you, and your dark shadow brings out the strong side of you. And that's how the brand developed. So we had these wonderful collections of teas, flowers, and incense, and the two shadow perfumes, the light and dark shadow. And we had it all together, the fragrances. And we met, I think it was Harrods in London, and just with a few talking about it for 5 minutes, they said, look, we want it straight away. If we want this, we want this brand, we want to do this. And then suddenly it all started like that. So really, again, by fate, by chance, by luck, by hard work, by conviction, I don't know. I've got none of the answers. All I say is we do what we love doing. I'm very lucky that other people actually like that. And it kind of happened. And Froyku grew into its own world. It's got its own rituals. We sit down with a service. People, we wash people's hands with a hot towel when they come into the into the store. We've got our own biscuits. We give people a cup of our own teas. We make four teas, one for each season. And we go through the whole collection. We hope people can learn, enjoy, and experience a ceremony through fragrance in a very nice manner. And that's how Froyku has really developed over the last 5 years.
Wow. I remember learning about Froyku maybe like 5 years ago now. The publicity firm you were with formerly had sent me a little incense pack. And then I was like, what is this brand? Like, what? Like, everything is so exquisite. And then your now current US distributors, when I found out that they had repped you, I was like, you need to send me this discovery kit.
Yeah.
And between Tynan and me, we probably own like 200 fragrances and have bins and bins of little sample vials. Yeah. And the Froyku set was the only sample set that I had juiced every single scent entirely.
Yeah.
Like, until each one was empty. They're so, so good.
They're beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. And I think that would really make Clara's heart warm, because it's, you know, when you put so much into it, and when you're working on poetry, as you know, poetry is one of these arts where you put so much in and you never know, all you want to have is just like one poem that someone likes, and that's all it is. So it's one of these wonderful things. So I'm very lucky to have Clara, who's extremely talented and loves that. And it's been great that we're able to bridge the two. Our love of poetry and our love of fragrances. And I think probably because I'm Irish and I've traveled to over 100 plus countries in the world and taken a lot of time out traveling in my life, I think the travel part with Memo really echoes with me. And I think the poetry part with Clara is really echoes with her. And we're lucky that we can combine our passions and our joys with what we do every day. So we're always kind of thanking God for having this opportunity to be able to do what we love doing. And so far, people appreciate it, and we're very thankful for that as well.
Did you guys seek out different perfumers to work on the Froyku collection, or was it just the same people that you trust with a different concept?
So at the beginning, we started out with the brand. Clara has been working with mainly working with female perfumers in the beginning. She was sort of a pioneer with female perfumers from the very beginning, and started with Alinor. And then what happens is your perfumers can move from one house to another house. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you automatically start working with other perfumers. But because Clara had met the 22 top perfumers when she'd writing her book nearly 20 years ago, she knew the different perfumers, the ones she'd got on very well with and met at the time. And so she had a natural feeling, well, look here, we're doing this product, this person, this perfumer could love working on this. And that's how she worked an awful lot as well, not only with Alinor Massenet, but also with Sophie Labbe at the very beginning on Froyku. And then naturally it developed to other perfumers throughout the brand, because now it's been going for over 5 years. The relationship between, I think, a brand, someone who's building a brand or a brand owner and a perfumer is very special. And we've always tried to prioritize long-term relationships, because I feel it's like two people speaking a language together. And when Clara can go to the perfumers that we work, she tries to work with the same perfumers all the time and keep working and keep working because they understand each other. And Clara can use her language and how she describes emotions, and they get that and they understand that, and they can get the right, hopefully the right ingredients and work to that. And it's all about relations. We feel that brands are built on strong relationships by people and giving that sort of signature or common denominator to the fragrances, because there's certain ingredients that Clara really loves, and she knows the perfumers that love working with those ingredients. So it was a natural development. And I think now, looking back, 7 years since Floraiku has been launched, I think we've had maybe 5 different perfumers now, 6 I think coming this year, that have worked on Floraiku.
Wow.
But they are still all working. It's not that we don't change. We try to bring more perfumers into working with us as we grow in size, so that Clara can really develop a relationship and then see how it fits with us olfactively. We're very open always to meeting perfumers.
Right. I feel like finding the right perfumer who gets what you're trying to, it's kind of like finding the right therapist.
It is. Yeah. It really is. I think, you know, that's one way of looking at it. It's just like any sort of, you could say relationship, working relationship. Mm-hmm. There's got to be understanding. There's got to be a huge amount of respect. And there's got to be, I think, patience, and especially with the creative process, which is different, because it's like a writer, you can't push someone to finish a book within a week. You can try, but you can't. So you've got to understand, and then you've got to help each other, and you've got to respect each other. So I think it's about respect, appreciation, and understanding. It's not a perfect science, and it can take time. And sometimes certain perfumes, we could say, no, look, this is just not working. We put it in a drawer, and we'll leave it for a couple of years, and maybe we'll come back to it, and maybe we won't. I think that sometimes to know that as well, and to have the courage to say, look, let's stop this now and let's try something else. And that's also something that Clara, over the time, has built up a relationship of respect, and the people and the noses know that she really appreciates their talent. And if they can't get something right, we're not saying who is not getting it right, then we'll put it in a drawer, we'll leave for a while, and hopefully we'll come back to it.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think that it's worth noting too, that even with working with a team of perfumers, more than just one person, the whole line does feel very cohesive and coming from the same perspective, which I think is not always easy to land when you work with different people to create different products in the same collection of whatever it is, but it's fragrance especially. So it's just, it feels all from the same, Floraiku universe, which is lovely.
Well, I think that's because Clara will never bring out a perfume without wearing it herself and liking it on herself. I think that's the signature we can give to a fragrance from any of the collections or in the brands, is that we love them ourselves. Mm. And we've worn them, we tried them, we know how they evolve on our skin and on our team in the office as well, try them all out. And we go from there. But it's, so we won't bring anything out that we can't wear, that we don't like ourselves. Even if it could be fantastic, we're not going to do it, because it will lose that special touch we're just trying to build over time of having our signature on the fragrances.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now you have another brand that also branched out with a different ethos, Hermetica. And I feel like of the three, I'm the least familiar with Hermetica, but you explained it to me as a stealth clean brand that doesn't advertise itself as clean, but just offers something to the consumer who, like, that might be an interest to them to get into fragrance.
Well, Hermetica, again, it started... Both Clara and I were going on a wait for a weekend for two, and we were chatting, and just before we'd left, my daughter had come in to the bath in the morning and turned off the tap and said, "Papa, you're wasting water. Water is a precious resource." And she was 5 at the time. And I said to myself, wow, so a 5-year-old is coming into the bath in the morning. Here I am, an Irish man who loves the sound of fresh, cold water running in the tap in the morning and telling me to turn it off because you only need one glass of water.
Right.
And that kind of hit me that wow, okay, I've learned something. You know, I knew water was precious, but I never knew that the educational systems were teaching this to our children at the age of 5. Mm-hmm. And they had a project on water and how important water was in the world. And when you think about it, wow, it was probably the most important thing I'd learned that year. And that dawned on me, and we went away and we're chatting about it, and we said, look, well, what will our children think of us in 10 years' time? Because what will we have done, what we have tried to do, or what challenge we put on ourselves in this industry to make things, do things differently, to think differently? And so we got out kind of a white piece of paper, as you do sort of sometimes, you're scribbling notes on us, and we started scribbling down all the things that we would like to do. And we started out by, putting down recyclable, renewable, green chemistry, conscious beauty, every word that kind of felt in that we thought would resonate with our kids when, as soon as they become of the age to really start thinking about what resonates to them in a brand. And at the time, we're in Florence, and we were visiting all the buildings in Florence, and we were reading an awful about the alchemists and how alchemy started and how when you got great minds together, you can make anything happen. So we thought, look, we're in a privileged position. We know somewhat about the perfume industry. We know the best noses in the world. A lot of companies out there might be willing to do something different. Let's go back and let's challenge our partners and how we can do something different. And so we went back as sort of a challenge and saying, well, how can we do it? And we took the basis of the word Hermetica, which comes from the first Hermetic tables, which were made by a Greek alchemist called Hermes Trismegistus, which meant Hermes three times the greatest. And this alchemist left these tables behind, which is the first written tables of alchemy. And we thought, well, look, what does it mean? What does alchemy mean in a simple way? It means bringing things together, making something very special out of something and recreating, you know, the original alchemists thought they could turn, you know, metal into gold. Or, mm-hmm. So our thing was, like, how can we make something that will be very different? And that's what we went about, and we explained our project, and we found with one of our partners that they had this wonderful base that was a skincare base, and that it had a moisturizer in it, and your skin felt really good when you put it on. Mm. We said, okay, well then, can it be used in fragrances? And they said, well, not really, no. Well, we haven't tried. And so then you started trying, and it didn't work. And you when you put the concentrate of the fragrance in, it would not work. And then bit by bit, we had to rewrite all the formulas and try again. It was not working. And after about 6 months, we're about to pull the plug and say, we can't do this. And suddenly we came out with a fragrance called The Source, which was a green, dry, vertical, amber fragrance. And we thought that we could have a fragrance that complex made using a skincare base. Wow. We said, well, then we're getting somewhere. So we kind of then refocused on it again, and we built a collection around this, and that's when it all came together. And what we realized was when you wear these fragrances, because they have got no alcohol, because the palette of ingredients we're using are all sustainable, conscious beauty ingredients, either they're man-made ingredients or they're natural ingredients, but they're natural ingredients that come from auto renewable sources. Mm-hmm. We said, look, well, if we can get all of these together and make something very special, well, it's worth telling the world about it. And that's what we did. And actually we found out that the perfume sort of dances in your skin because, you, as you know, alcohol is the biggest projector perfume. When you wear a perfume with alcohol, it's wonderful because it projects the perfume everywhere and you've got this sort of this amplifier effect mm-hmm. around you. But when you're wearing a perfume that doesn't have any alcohol in it, you get to smell the whole of the perfume from the head, the middle, and the base notes all together at the same time. And it sort of dances in your skin. So that's why we worked at Hermetica. And when we started talking to our customers and showing them the fragrance and understanding it was a different way of wearing fragrance, you can wear it in your hair, you can wear it in your body, you can wear it as a fragrance as well. And it suddenly started taking off. And we just kind of followed from there. So we've had a wonderful experience trying to tell lots of countries around the world a new way of wearing fragrance, but with a different meaning behind it. And it's just a wonderful alternative to someone that's looking for something very different, that wants a perfume that dances on their skin and makes their skin feel really great. And it's very, very sensual. And so it's really just an alternative to what we do with the other fragrance brands. And it's got a huge following, a lot of young people, a lot of Generation Z, but a lot of other people as well who are looking for something that bit different.
Mm. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, that's so cool that you just change one projection method and the whole experience of the scent is different.
Right, right.
I think for your listeners listening to that, if you want to have a kind of a very sort of visual idea, if you take a whiskey glass or a brandy glass or a cognac glass and you put some whiskey or cognac into the glass and you smell it, you smell the alcohol and wow, you got that effect straight away. But you take a glass of champagne and you see the constant little bubbles dancing the whole way through it. You have a wonderful, gentle fragrance, but it constantly has little bubbles going. That's like exactly what's happening. So it's like the difference is one is a glass of champagne, the other is a glass of liquor. That's the difference between the two ways of fragrance. So it's constantly dancing on your skin, like the little bubbles going up through a champagne glass. You won't have an idea. That's how Hermetica is on your skin. So you've got this constant, the fragrance dancing on your skin throughout the whole day. As for the other, is like this really perfect alcohol that amplifies and you can smell it and it radiates straight away. And the other is just constantly dancing in your skin. So it's two different ways of wearing your fragrance and expressing yourself as well.
I love that. That's a really good way to think about it.
Yeah.
Do you find that the consumer for Hermetica, someone who's looking for a quote unquote cleaner option, do you find that they have a different taste or are looking for a different scent profile than, you know, your memo customer or the typical fragrance buyer? Is there anything that you have to keep in mind for that customer specifically?
At the beginning, we thought at the beginning that our customer wanted to learn about the whole process behind Hermetica.
Yep.
And now after a few years, we find the customer doesn't want to remember our customer wants to find a wonderful fragrance. They want to find a new fragrance in their wardrobe.
Yeah.
And when they try it in their skin, that's the difference really with Hermetica. So you can have one fragrance, but when you've got something on your skin that really is like having your skin being clothed and your skin feels great afterwards and they wear it. So for us, it was at the beginning, we thought that customers would say yes. We had all these customers who had an engagement for conscious or clean beauty, but actually not. That's kind of like a secondary. There are customers who only look for conscious or clean beauty. Yes, they come to Hermetica, but the fragrance lovers who love fragrance and who are aficionados, they are really curious about something that wears differently, that wears on the skin throughout the day differently. And so that's being a different way. Just looking, and you know yourself, you're looking for a great fragrance. You're looking for something that's part of my wardrobe, something to express myself. And that's the first and foremost thing. Then after that, what comes with it, it can be also something that makes you feel really good about what you've done and your engagement. So for every Hermetica fragrance, we plant a tree in the world. You know, we're really engaged with the brand. And for Memo, we work with a foundation in Africa for game conservation. And with 4IQ, we have a film festival called Cine IQ. So each brand is engaged, but Hermetica really is about the consciousness about everything we do and every step we do in it. So I think Hermetica is just another way of wearing fragrance. But I still think we all at the end of the day want to go out and find a beautiful new fragrance. And that's our first thing, because I think personally, when I buy something, I want to buy, especially a fragrance, with a meeting that's very special. And that's about joy, about the smell, about the picture I get from smelling that fragrance. And Hermetica, all the fragrances are based around the ingredient. So the names are called like rose fire. It's a rose and fire, or apair, or vertical oud, for example. So then, or amber bee. So when you pick up a bottle of Hermetica, you look at the name is already talking to you about the fragrance. So that's your first introduction to it. And I think from there, when you try the perfume on, you're building your own image of that. And I think it's only afterwards, when you hear the story about what the engagement and the behind the brand is, that you feel, wow, this is a great fragrance. I love it on me. And it's really an engaged brand. But I think trying fragrances and finding a new fragrance, I think you still always got to go in there and just find a fragrance you love first and then find out more about it afterwards. If that makes sense, what I'm saying.
That definitely
makes sense. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Love that.
I think it's like meeting someone. You go out and you meet someone new, a new boyfriend or girlfriend or something, and someone gives you their resume and tells you all about themselves before you actually have a chance to talk to them. It kind of kills a bit of the mystery, really. And I think there always is a bit of a mystery in when you first get introduced to a new fragrance, or you first fall upon a new fragrance, or you first discover it. And I think that's really important. I think that's part of the joy in life, is like, you know, you try a new fragrance and wow, I love that. And then suddenly it evokes your questions and then you go further. But in the beginning, leave that bit of joy at the beginning, leave that bit of unknown, that bit of romance, that bit of discovery. And I think that's joy, it's happiness and beauty.
Totally. I feel like that's why like marketing is so overblown in the fragrance industry, because they're really trying to compel you to buy into something that like you have to experience it to know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much for giving us your time and your brain.
Yes.
We've both just fallen in love with Memo and 4IQ and Hermetica. And I think for me personally, it's really nice to know that there's real people behind a brand.
Yeah, definitely.
Real people who are in like this really cool creative partnership.
Mm-hmm.
and then they create beautiful things. But it's so cool to see really, really fancy luxury perception items. And then like, oh, it's this really cool husband and wife team that is like a creative duo behind it. It's cool.
I must say, we have got a great team that work with us. You know, we've got people who start from the very beginning, being with us all the time. And it's you know, I think if you look back again, people always write sort of success stories after the success. No one writes them ever at the very beginning before it happens. We're learning a lot. We've got a great team of people that work with us. And I think without them, nothing would happen either. And we're now, you know, developing and just trying to make sure that everything that we do is done with the same love and passion as the very first day. As to why, you know, we're traveling so much. I try to visit all countries around the world and try to balance the act of family, you know, your family, friends, and work at the same time. But again, we're very lucky that we're actually privileged to work in an industry. As an industry full of dreams, an industry full of beauty, an industry that makes people feel great. And we're privileged to work in this wonderful industry and with great people. And we're learning every day and we love what we do. So I think it's a great privilege and we feel very lucky for that. And, you know, hopefully we can continue to express ourselves with new fragrances and share our passions with different people around the world.
I love that. It definitely comes through in the product.
Absolutely. Sure. It's already happening.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your vacation to talk to us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
Wow, not me being like, so what's your clean brand about? And then being totally schooled that it wasn't about that at all.
No, I mean, you're right. Sure. I do appreciate that he wasn't like clean for the sake of clean.
Right,
it was interesting to hear what set Hermetica sort of like apart from everything.
Yeah.
Also cool. Like I loved hearing that you can use that sort of formula anywhere on the body or in the hair. Like that's awesome, you know?
That is so cool too, because I feel like fragrance has such a rigid format of like, this is for your skin. This is like hair mists.
Right.
And I think on the last episode, I was like, why don't you just spray your perfume in your hair? And they're like, but there's alcohol. And I'm like, so what?
Yeah.
I mean, I also just like chemically assault my hair every other month. So
yeah. Yeah.
And now I'm wondering what other brands or what other mechanisms for fragrance wear or scent wear could evolve from like experimenting with that sort of stuff. Just really cool.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see like an influx of solids again?
Yeah.
Ugh.
What are like, part of me is like, what are you even made out of, wax?
No, I mean, and not that I expected anything differently, but that man knows his shit.
Yeah.
You know, I guess you have to when you have three different brands, but
yeah,
it's cool that he has Memo and then the other two, and they have such unique and singular perspectives, and they are so differentiated from each other. I love that.
What we know of the beauty industry, everybody's trying to like have the umbrella corporations, and then they have like three or four different brands within them that like cover all their grounds.
Right.
But at the same time, when it comes to fragrance, it's like, why couldn't you just have this in a collection?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad that they branched it out, because I think the Floricu stuff is a completely different vibe.
Yep.
Totally different vibe.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Now I want them.
I want to wear more Floricu now.
Yeah, I was like, send them.
Right.
They're really cool. You should check them out. I will personally recommend Inverness, French leather, Irish leather, and Marfa. I feel like those are like the standouts.
I want to smell all those.
Okay, yeah. Well, you're getting the discovery set soon.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. But yeah, we hope you enjoyed that. And you can find us at our website, smellyoulater.live. You can leave us a little voice message on the Smell You Later hotline, or you could find our merch there. Follow us on Instagram. We're at smellyoulater.mp3. I am at Sabletooth Tigra.
I'm at Tynan Buck. And until next time, we will smell you later.